Remind all participants, this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thanks, Kelly. Thanks, all. We have a pretty good crew on the call, but as usual, we will wait just a minute to do the roll call. The agenda is on your Adobe Connect screen. Really, at this point, just three things, all of which are flexible, and if folks have a different idea, I'm happy to rejigger this, but right now we're dividing the call into thirds, basically. The first third, taking a look at the proposal comparison matrix. The next third would be running through the list of harms that I have started to draft, and the third, taking a look at the list of definitions that Mike Zupke posted to the list yesterday, and then any other business at the end. If there's anything that people would like to redirect us towards, that's fine. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I sent a message out just prior to the meeting. Looking at the revised table, almost everyone agrees that the 0 or 2% board alternative is not what we want to see. Although I understand the mosaic argument if we don't want to separate parts, and I've made the argument myself, I'm wondering if we can actually come to closure on raising the 0.2 to 15. The IPC proposal right now is the only one that uses that number in some cases.
Okay, well,
that might send an important message to the board.
Yeah, before we get to the content, let's just add that.
Okay.
And I think what I'll do is I'll call that points of agreement and see if we can find some.
And we have several no's, so never mind.
Yeah, there you go. We'll leave that agenda item on there anyway and see. And could I remind everybody to mute? We've got a lot of background noise going on right now. Okay. I think that, Jeff, did you raise your hand?
I changed the hand to a disagree, but I also sent out on the agenda items something about the harms that I think we discussed it last time to sort of tighten up that list of harms. I know that we're in the beginning stages of it or in the middle stages, but I want to know if we can go through it because some of the harms I'd want to classify that are direct from co-ownership or from vertical integration. And I guess the levels that could happen or some could be, I think, easier facilitated co-ownership. So I wanted to know if we could go through that as well, or at least put that as a higher agenda item on some of the parts of the harms.
Yeah, that was sort of my goal with the harms, was to essentially have kind of a preliminary discussion to shuffle those perhaps into some piles with that aim in mind. I went through, Jeff Newman sent a bunch of links, and I went through and read all of the linked items and extracted a few more and refined a few of them. They were mostly aimed at the harms from vertical integration. And so it's a little heavy on that side of the equation. But anyway, that was the goal with that one.
No, I want to thanks for starting to put that together. But if we could just have that, we could start refining that. It would be great. Thanks.
Yep. Jeff Newman, this is an agenda question, or shall we get on into the actual work?
No, I'm sorry. I meant to. I disagreed with Alan's statement, so I don't think 15% is the right number. But anyway,
okay. Why don't we get off that? Let's do the roll, and then we'll dive quickly into the table. Let's do the roll. I don't want to hold this up anymore. Glenn, if you could run us through that would be great.
Certainly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the Vertical Integration Call, 7th of June, and on the call we have Siba Mutitsami, Cheryl Langdonor, Mikey O'Connor, Hazel Shah, Eric Brunner-Williams, Avery Doria, Paul Diaz, Jeff Newman. Sorry, my screen is slow. Christina Allman, Tony Harris, Sebastian Bachelot, Roberto Gaetano, Phil Buckingham, John Nevitt, Tim Ruiz, Ken Stubbs, Stefan Hammock, Michael Pelage, Brian Cute, Catherine Olma, Michele Nilon, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Tero Mustala, Christina Rosette, Thomas Barrett, Alan Greenberg, Barry Cobb, Volker Greimann, Jason Frey, Scott Austin, Jason Witness, Alan Greenberg, and Jarko Ruska. For staff, we have Dan Halloran, Liz Gaster, Margie Milam, and Mike Zupka. Thank you, Mikey. Over to you.
Thanks, Glenn. And thanks all for joining. This is, we're sort of getting down to the end, and so I don't want to spend a lot of time on things that don't help us reach an agreement, but I did want to spend a second on this table because I didn't get many updates, and I don't know whether that's because things haven't changed or because things are changing and they were changing so much that people weren't ready to send them. So I just briefly want to zip through this. I'm sharing my screen, and so if folks notice sluggish response, then we've confirmed my theory that it's my bandwidth that's causing the problem. But one of the things I want to do is run through what I thought the board or the new version of the DAG, how that fit in our table. And so, as you see, I've put 2% for the for both directions of the ownership. I've put a big no in terms of the question is more cross-ownership allowed if the registry agrees not to distribute, or the registrar agrees not to distribute TLDs. I found them to be supporting the idea of special objective criteria as a possibility, and I saw them supporting non-discrimination and then not supporting any exceptions for, you know, the four kinds of things. I didn't see any, you know, I don't know why I have a no there. Under threshold, registry may distribute directly, or two, registry may co-own greater than 15% to distribute. I took that as a no in both cases, but I'm wondering why. Anyway, I'm a little uncertain about that. And then on some of these later ones, I couldn't find a reference to back-end service providers. And I couldn't find a reference to resellers. And then the section that I pulled out as the sort of emphasized section that I wanted to highlight came out of the contract language and really talked about you can't see it all. Hang on a minute. You should all be using the real document when you can. The one that I was really interested in is the last one, their language about the board will review this issue again if no GNSO policy results on these topics. I just wanted to stick that in the record because we talked a bit about that on the last call. Now, the only update I got was from Avery on the CAM, formerly known as MMA proposal. proposal, and I've stuck that in. I was curious, and I want to put a couple of people on the spot. Tim, should we take your line out? Have you now merged with the Phileas proposal? Is that the way I should interpret the PIR, Phileas, and CORE have merged into one?
Tim doesn't have a line. GoDaddy does.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We have, I guess, merged, signed on to, or whatever, that joint proposal. But you could, I don't know how exactly you want to use the table. If this is to reflect just the current situation, then
yeah.
I guess that line could come out if we wanted to look at this as, you know, trying to maybe see it in a trend fashion. Then maybe the old ones could stay in there in some way. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe what I'll do is I'll gray them out so that they're still there, so that people can see where the proposals were before. Kathy and Eric, same question to you two. Is it safe for me to add PIR and CORE to the affiliates line at this stage of the game?
This is Kathy. Belatedly, I sent out a revised table entry. So it's not just the affiliates proposal. There's a new proposal that's been shaped and put together by the combination of groups and individuals that's supporting it. So you will see it. It went out just before the meeting, and apologies that it is so late. I like the idea of graying out prior proposals to kind of see the evolution towards this, and that may mean, to be fair, adding in some proposals that kind of from earlier on that got merged into like the JN squared. But I like the idea of kind of keeping the PIR and affiliates lines and graying them out. That's a good idea.
Okay. Well, let me just
see. That's correct. I'm actually looking at the one that Kathy sent, and it's got the this joint proposal in it.
Okay.
And I forgot that wasn't in the copy you're looking at.
Let me take the line that's in Kathy's and paste it in. This is a classic instance of better late than never.
Good. And this is Kathy. I'll add that this is a work in progress, and we'll be submitting some revisions to this line because people are still signing on.
Okay. That's very helpful. So I'm going to back this GoDaddy out of the affiliates line so that we can leave these as historical. Okay. Anybody else got anything that we need to change on the table right now? I don't want to spend a whole lot of time editing a document live in front of you people, but if there is something crucial that folks want to talk about before I wrap this up, let's talk about it now. Siva, go ahead. Oh, you may be on mute, Siva.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, now I can hear you.
I noticed that my proposal is not included in this table. Who has prepared this? Is there any particular reason why it's not?
Yeah, I replied to your email to the list. If you send me a row, just the way Kathy just did, I'm happy to stick it in the table, but I didn't get a row from you. And there's no way that I'm going to interpret people's tables for them. That's too hard. So if you would go through and just prepare a row of the Excel spreadsheet that reflects where your table's at, I'm happy to stick it in.
Okay, I'll prepare a row and send it to you. Thank you.
Terrific, thanks. Jeffrey.
Yeah, I just, this is
Jeff Newman. I'd like to see, actually, before the lines change, I'd like to actually see on an email all of those people and organizations. I mean, I know Alan has and Cheryl has, but I have not seen emails from the other partners on there that have agreed with the affiliates proposal. So it'd be just from a documentation perspective, I'd like to see that documented. Incidentally, a call I had with Ron Androff actually on Friday was that not in line with the affiliates proposal completely. But that's why I just want to make sure that all those people weigh in on the list.
Yeah, that seems like a good habit.
This is Tim. Yeah. I think we should probably come up with some sort of name because it's not really the affiliates proposal. I mean, if you look back at the affiliates' original proposal, it's quite different. So like Kathy said, this is a new proposal. And I don't know if it's, you know, well, I had no clue as to what to call it. But I would like to stop calling it the affiliate proposal.
All right. We'll let the partners and the partnership come up with a name, and as soon as it's named, we'll change it. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make clear that I, like a number of others, said among the proposals, that's the one that we are favoring, but would like to see changes before the August or whatever drop-dead date is for the final version of the applicant guidebook. So we are not totally content with it. It's the one that comes closest to, we think, being acceptable to our groups.
So this is
we are supporting it hook, line, and sinker.
Right. So this is the I can live with it statement rather than the I enthusiasm.
I can live with it and hope to be able to influence along the way. Yes.
Okay. Very good. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, just briefly with regard to Jeff Newman's question and request. The signatories on the document are the signatories to the document. There's no change there. There are some entities, or people like Alan and others, who have weighed in support of some form on the list. I think that's sufficient for the time being. And I think it's to be recognized that there are folks who have signed on in full, and there are folks who support, and folks that support in a kind of I can live with this if this is the outcome, but I'd like to tweak it since.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. Anything else before we move on from the actual table itself? I'm thinking that we might want to do one more round of table update before the Thursday call. And it would be neat to get the update a little before the call so I don't do it live. Because Thursday's call is going to be short because of the GNSO meeting. Our call will only be an hour because we then conflict with the GNSO and we lose a lot of people. So last chance to talk about the table, and then I think we'll move on to other stuff. Okay. That's it. I thank you all. Let me just save this. Any bandwidth problems while I was doing that? I didn't detect any, and stop this and share something else. Okay, here's my little lame list. Mikey's lame list, that's a technical term. And as usual, I have to make all the usual, it's extremely draft caveats. And let me just introduce it a little bit, and then why don't we discuss it and discuss how much we want to get into this before Brussels, because this could be one that we work on, sort of on the list, and kind of work through Brussels, but have it really closer to done, either at Brussels or slightly thereafter when we actually publish the interim report for public comment and constituency statements. What I did to change it from the draft that you saw before was Jeff Newman sent a long list of links that point pointed to a bunch of documents, and I read them all over the weekend and did a couple of things. I extracted a few more harms, and I also, after reading those documents, clumped the harms differently. And neither of these do I have any editorial pride over at all. And so anything is fair game. We can clump them differently. We can clump them into likely or unlikely. We can do all kinds of things. But I wanted to let you know that it's moving and let you see what I got. Now, the thing that I didn't do is change the harms from continued separation section, because all of the links that Jeff's email had were pointing towards statements of harm from vertical integration. And so if somebody has a similar list of links that they would like me to read and extract from, please post them to the list, and I will do the same sort of thing that I did to the second half of this list, expand it, clump it differently, etc. I'm not sure that I want to spend a lot of time on the call actually analyzing the harms, but I would be interested in sort of broad statements or approaches. Jeff, I was going to call on you, so maybe I'll just hand it over to you.
I'm completely with you. I don't want to go over the call and, on any of the specific harms that are on this list because it's still in motion. But what I'd like to do is suggest some possible categories for harms. So I think, as you said, we have potential harms from continued separation. And then I think the way we could, and we would say continued separation, and then maybe, and then we would say from integration, we could do it along the following lines that would be, you know, complete vertical integration, and then something that the other part would be allowing up, you know, up to 100% cross ownership if you don't distribute that TLD, and then maybe on the 2%, and maybe I guess on the affiliate's proposal of the 15%, sort of bucket it into those levels, and say, you know, does it exist? Does it not? Is it, you know, more than likely in that effect? I'm just trying to think of some sort of matrix or way to categorize it, because I think, and then we can, of course, discuss, then we can get down to the nitty-gritty of, is it really going to happen because of that, or is it more than, is it, yes, it's a harm, but it's more likely if there's cross-ownership. So I think a grid like that might be the best way to do it, but that's, you know, I'd love to hear some other suggestions on that.
Thanks, Jeff. Let's continue that kind of conversation, and what I'll do is I'll listen to the MP3 and take a first try at a grid as my next draft, irrespective of whether I get more lines for the table. But that's a great idea. Kathy, go ahead. There you go.
Now I'm off mute.
There you go.
I wanted to see whether we could divide up the potential harms by who they harm. So potential harms against for registrants, potential harms for registrars, and probably to a smaller extent, potential harms for registries.
It seems like another couple
because
of
that's how
three
we discuss them on the list.
Yeah, it seems like three good columns for a table for sure. Yeah.
Great, thank you.
Jeff Newman.
Hey, sorry about that. I started talking on mute. I actually want to support what Jeff Eckhouse just said about you know, dividing up the harms, because I think there are different harms that would result, and Volker actually mentioned one. If you, let's say, adopt the cute proposal, I guess is what some have referred to it now, or whatever it is, you know, that then may exclude competition. That's a different harm than if potentially it was 15% or it was 5% or whatever the rule is. So I think there are different harms depending on the type of proposal. So I would favor kind of dividing those out. And I also, this is not a question on substance. I just didn't know what was meant when it says potential harm from continued separation as registry failure. And I just if there's a way you can cite or put the citation to which document you found that in, I know that's a lot of work.
I was kicking myself about 3 hours into this project for not citing, and looking back at the list, I was asking the exact same question myself. Where did this come from? And I may do that as homework for myself. I may just try and retrace my steps and try and cite these because I think it's important enough that it's worth the work. My recollection on registry failure was that this was a harm from continued separation, and it was a person in a presentation to Seoul saying that continued separation might result in registry failure because they couldn't get a registrar to distribute their names. But I should go back and cite that, and so I will take an action to do that.
Thanks, Mikey.
Yep.
And by the way, we do appreciate you taking this on because it is a lot of work, so thank you very much.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm the only one that's done the steps, so it's going to be a lot easier for me to retrace the steps than anybody else, so I'm happy to do it. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I'd like soon to see a little bit more description on some of them. I'm not sure what reduced ability to differentiate registries means in this context. And I'll also note that there are some of them, such as lower service quality, which could equally apply to a vertical integration lowering service quality, especially if all registrars don't have equal access. So I think we have to be careful about putting things in one side when it actually perhaps applies to both, depending on the implementation.
Well, and you'll see in lots of instances there are duplicates. There are duplicates there where I came across them in something that somebody wrote. But I think ultimately what we're going to want to be able to do is identify everything that may have a duplication rather than just relying on the stuff that's been written before so that we cover stuff like that, Alan. Because I think you're right. I mean, I think in some cases, you can make a case either way, and we should probably do that. Kathy?
I forgot to put down my hand. Thank you. And repeating Jeff's comments, thanks for all your work on this. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, every day is a Saturday, and a fella needs a hobby. Oh, I'm happy to do it. Alan is Brian. Go ahead. Unless you're...
Yeah. Thanks, Mikey. This is a point to one of the comments that Jeff Eckhouse has made in a prior call, perhaps this morning, too. With regard to the harms list, a distinction he's trying to put forward is harms that have nothing to do with cross-ownership. And what I want to make sure is reflected in this list is that the points we've made in the past about access to registry data and the harms that can ensue through the use of registry data are, in effect, in some cases, would result in an amplification of harms that have occurred in a single registrar setting, so that it is important to note that the harms that can occur from access to registry data effectively make the harms we've seen in a single registrar setting grow by an order of magnitude, because instead of a single registrar having access to a limited pool of data, they now see lookups and other data that allows them to see the broad TLD market. So if we're going to make a distinction along those lines that a category of harms has nothing to do with cross-ownership, first of all, I don't think that's appropriate. And if we do that, I'd like to see the qualification in there that there are certain harms that can be – that exist in a non-cross-ownership setting, but that can be vastly amplified in a vertically integrated setting.
Okay. I'll add that to my little list. That sounds good. Jeffrey Eckhouse is back at us.
I think I commented on that. I think there's a distinction that I tried to make. I think I said that it would be more likely that, or that it's not more likely, but easier to facilitate, I think is what I was trying to get at. By saying more amplified or, say, making it worse, that's a tough one because I think that distinction saying you don't know how bad the, saying how bad the crime is going to be, saying, hey, if I leave open a jewelry store, are they going to take, two pieces or are they going to take 100 pieces? I don't know that what the answer is by not having an alarm there, but, I think what my thought was, I think there should be a distinction. I agree with you, but I thought it was either is more likely or not more likely, but could be easier path or could be facilitated easier versus how bad the damage could be. I don't know, but I think we'd say there could be damage or there couldn't be. I think that was the distinction. I agree there should be a distinction on that.
I think what I'll do is I'll take a crack at the table and push it out to the list for people to hammer on a bit. I kind of get the gist of where this is headed, and I'll take a try at some words, and then we can tune them up. Tim, go ahead. Oh, you may be on mute.
Yeah, I was just going to respond to Jeff about the jewelry heist example. We just need to be careful there because the difference, in my mind, is more a thief who has to break into the jewelry store to take what he wants, and someone who's been handed the key and asked to run the store, and then decides to take what he wants. So there's a significant difference, and I don't think we should forget that.
I'm going to tiptoe out of my chair role for just a second and throw a possible analogy out there that occurred to me. Because I think that some of our analogies are perhaps more harsh than they necessarily need to be. And what I was struck by is the similarity between domain names and chips that come out of a chip fab factory. And this is going back 25 years of my career when I worked for a supercomputer company. And we had Honeywell make chips for us. And there was no way that they could know when they made the chips how fast they would be. Some of them would be fast, and we would use those, and some of them would be slow, and we wouldn't use those in the main CPU. We'd use them elsewhere. But there was really no way to know in advance which chips were the fast ones. You basically had to make them and test them and then put them in piles. And the ones that were fast were really expensive, and the ones that weren't were really cheap. Well, in a way, domain names are kind of the same way. A registry doesn't really know which names are going to be the spendy ones until the domain is up, until you can see the traffic. And I think that one of the interesting things that I'd like us to discuss is the implications of essentially being able to do that testing cycle on a domain, with or without restrictions. And it seems to me that there are a couple of ways to handle this. One is to say you can't test domains. The registry can't share that data with anybody. The other way to do it is to let everybody have that data and let everybody see the fast chips. And, I don't want to get us totally derailed, but I'm not sure that we need to use such negative analogies when we describe this. It's just sort of a different view. So that I'm going to step back into my chair role and let that drop. But that's just a little rant. Anything else about the list of harms before I take a crack at a table? I will try to get that done before the next call, although I don't know that we'll spend a lot of time on the call talking about it. I think the next call is really the one where we're going to have to see if we're close to landing this thing. And that'll probably be the bulk of the conversation, but I'll get it out as quick as I can. I'm not seeing much else on that. Tim, I assume your hand is up from the last time, but if you had another point, feel free to chime in right now. Scott, go ahead.
Just one question, Mikey. I think the list of harms is good. I just wondered if you can recall, in crafting it, if you incorporated anything from the Salop and Wright or the Cray report, if there's any, if we know that harms that may have been touched upon in those analyses are covered in this.
I'm not sure. I don't remember actually reading the report directly. So,
hey, Mikey.
Let me go do that. Jeff, go ahead.
This is Jeff Newman. I did have the presentation as
did
one of the
have
links.
It?
Off.
Okay.
It was one of the links off of my email.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Then, in that case, yes, I did read that and went through and picked off the ones that I could find.
Okay, so that's
where those citations would come in darn handy, and I will try and add those on.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. All right. I am now moving us along to the list of definitions that Mike Zupke sent. He actually sent it last Friday, and it got stuck in my queue, so my apologies for the shortness. The reason it came out so close to the call is not Mike's fault. I want to make that clear. And this is, again, a first draft. I don't want to spend a lot of time working the draft today, but I know that we've got at least one term that we need to slip in, the whole market discussion. Is it one TLD? Is it all TLDs? But I'd also be interested in hearing from people if there are other terms that need to get added to this list, and then we'll, same sort of thing, we'll hammer on it on the list and clean it up and get it ready to go. And mostly this is just an opportunity to sort of bring it to your attention and get you to at least scan your eye down it. Presumably you can scroll. Have I given you the ability to scroll? Let me just make sure.
No scroll.
Sorry. Now you can scroll it. My apologies. I'll tell you, these calls, there are a lot of moving parts going all at the same time. Please do take a look at it. I think it's a very good start, and I really appreciate the work that's gone into it, and just want to make sure that we complete it well. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to echo that. I think that this is a great start. The definitions are very good, and I did have just one question. I guess this would be, if we do have any questions, should they go to the list? I don't know if Mike Zupke's on the call. Should we direct them to him? What do you think is the best way to move forward if there were questions on the definitions?
This is Mikey speaking as Mikey. I like him on the list because then we all get to see the conversation, and it also goes into the record. So unless it's, you know, unless there's a reason not to, I would think do it on the list, and then we'll, Mike and I will keep an eye on that and make sure that they get answered. Scott, go ahead.
Just one quick comment, and it's sort of an overriding comment because I know this isn't the time for wordsmithing, but there's repeated use of the word security, and as much as I realize most of these definitions came from that realm, having worked in corporate law for a number of years, I'm just wondering if that should be changed to an ownership interest in a registry, because these may or may not be deemed securities in terms of people getting profit from an enterprise using the old Howey test, et cetera, but they may not be actual securities or deemed a security, and that's really not defined anywhere, just so we don't have to deal with stockholding. It seems to me just an ownership interest in a registry should cover the waterfront.
I'm going to leave that one. Actually, Scott, I think the thing to do is frame that one for the list so we get that thought captured. And then, you know, I'm going to punt that one to Mike and the team to take that under advisement and get it worked in. But, you know, I think that's a perfect example of the kind of thing that we want to run this, you know, run through this and tune up. That and you know, terms that are still needing definition. Because I tried a different tack on that, and that didn't work, I don't think, and that was to get proposal advocates to include definitions in their proposals. And, you know, that didn't work. So we'll try this instead. Anything else on the definition stuff? Okay. That leaves us with a nice little chunk of time. We have about 45 minutes, at least on the schedule for the call, to talk about anything you want. I sort of throw it to you all. Do you want to continue? Do you want to continue working off the call, off the list, behind the scenes? How would folks like to proceed at this point? I don't want to unnecessarily hold 40 people 45 minutes longer on a call than need be. That's a lot of person hours. But if there's a use that we could put this to that would help get us closer to agreement or talk about tough topics or whatever, I'm game. Christina, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I'm just a little confused based on the track on the list on, I guess, Thursday, Friday, and over the weekend as to what the status is in terms of the report, in terms of who's doing a first draft. Are we supposed to be breaking up into teams and drafting sections? And also whether there's any interest in the working group for me to put forward the council agenda placeholder motion that I
did
not have this.
Let me start, and then others can chime in. I need to visit with the staff folks, Mike and Margie, and see how much of the, you know, which sections they would feel comfortable doing a draft of. I've gotten several notes from folks off the list describing what those sections could be, so I have a pretty good list of sections, and my thought was that I would go to Mike and Margie and say, which of these would you like to draft, and which of them would you not like to draft, and I would start sketching out those sections that they don't want to draft, and leave a sort of gaping hole in the middle for a description of the deal, or the deals, the clumps, if we wind up with sort of one, that's great, that's the payday section. If we have several, you know, a section that would sort of describe those and sort of get a sense from the next call and off the list as to the level of support for those. And then drive very hard, probably later in the week and over the weekend, to get a draft to you all for the Monday call, which will be our last call before Brussels, because the Thursday call is a travel day for most folks. But that's awful tight. If I get you a draft by next Monday, that gives you no time to react to it. And so I think your motion to suspend the 10-day in-advance rule would be hugely helpful, partly because it would help us give us more time to rework a draft, and partly because then if something of substance changed on the Saturday before the Sunday GNSO meeting, in Brussels, we could incorporate those changes into the draft and not be in violation of the rules. So I'm very enthusiastic about the motion idea and would be interested to hear if there are any folks who are sort of vehemently opposed to that. Let's see, Liz, since she's maybe going to be bearing some of the brunt of this, let me call on Liz first. Go ahead, Liz.
Thanks, Mikey. Margie actually had to leave the Adobe Connect. I think she's still on the phone, so it's actually a hand raised for her because I think she'll want to speak to this. And, Margie, I don't know if you're there. She is prepared to do some drafting.
Great.
And, is happy to do, certainly the structure and the background and, summary of where we are. I think she would like some help from the proposers in capturing concisely the different ingredients, which I think she can reach out to you all online to do. But she is willing to, to take up the pen in the next week or so. I wanted to make a couple of also just procedural comments. I mean, these deadlines, one is the board-imposed deadline, right, and for papers and such for Brussels. So the document that Margie's able to put together, I mean, we just have to recognize that it can't be an official document for Brussels because this is a board-imposed thing. And in terms of the motions, it's really going to be, a council call about waiving any deadlines. But we're happy to help where we can. We just want to be sensitive to the fact that if there are people out there that object because of how close we are Brussels, that would be something to take into consideration, because I think that was the board's concern about people really being able to read things in advance of the meeting. So I'll let Margie comment on anything she might need specifically on help from others, but certainly we can help out there.
Terrific. Margie, do you want to chime in?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Liz is right. What I can work on this weekend, I'll go ahead and get started right away. The background stuff, the motion summary, the summary of public comment, just those the basic procedural type stuff. And I can certainly circulate something to the list later in the week. But where I would need help, I think, is really in, it depends on how much depth we want on the various proposals, or, if we want the summaries of the various proposals, then I would look to the proposers to send me that text. And then I would want, if possible, you guys to divide among yourselves how to describe the consensus, whatever that, whatever it turns out to be. So I could do the outline and all of the kind of the procedural stuff, but the kind of the meat of what the proposal is, I'd like to see if you guys could divide among yourselves that work.
Yeah, that seems entirely straightforward and appropriate. Jeff Newman, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Christina a question, and also what I didn't hear mentioned, there is a report, but this is part of a PDP, so before anything goes to the council, public comment has to be received on the recommendation. We can't really skip that step, and those of you who know me, I like to make sure that the PDP is actually followed for a number of reasons. So, Christina, if all we're doing, is just putting it in for a council discussion on what to do next, does that day rule have to be waived, or is this something that it could just be put on the agenda for a discussion item and then out for public comment?
Before Christina answers, let me chime in that, indeed, we're following all of the PDP stuff. There's a public comment and constituency statement chunk of work that's scheduled right after Brussels. We've already gone through one round of each of those, and I think the 10-day rule, if I'm not mistaken, is the 10-day rule to get something on the agenda of a GNSO meeting. So it's not necessarily an initial report kind of rule. It's an agenda rule. But I defer to others who are much smarter about this than me. Christina?
Yeah, Jeff, the intention here is not to circumvent the PDP process in terms of discussing a report. I really am trying to just have a placeholder, not only to make sure that it gets on the agenda, but in the event that there is that there are enough developments between now and the council meeting on the Wednesday morning, that it may be helpful to the process for the council to pass some kind of resolution, even if it's something along the lines of kind of what we put into the resolution approving the RAA amendments, where we encourage the board to act promptly, et cetera. The idea really is to just make sure that we've got our bases covered, and if it turns out that there is an interest and a desire to have something like that happen, or there is significant movement, that we procedurally have left ourselves the opportunity to do that.
Alan, you're next.
Yeah, we're in an interesting position and somewhat uncharted in that we're taking the position that we have two outcomes from this PDP, something for the applicant guidebook, and then the longer term, if we haven't already done it, the longer term position on vertical integration. I would hesitate to call what we're talking about now the initial report that's described in the PDP process. I don't think we're nearly gelled enough to do that. And I agree with Christina. I think we need a motion to be able to discuss it, whatever the it is, and that should be done ahead of time. But I guess I'd like to see a report to council, but not the report with a capital R. And for that, I question whether we need the boilerplate that we may be asking Margie to put together in the last week when there are surely a lot of other things to be done. I think we should concentrate on substance as a report to the JNSO as opposed to trying to put together the formal report that's called for in PDP processes.
Before I jump to the rest of the queue, what I've done in our little project planning exercise is basically built two PDPs into one project so that we cover the public comment, constituency statement basis really well, since this is an important conversation that lots of people want to weigh in on. And so I think that to the extent that we can essentially do two PDPs for the price of one, adhering to that process, I think, gets us a number of things. I mean, the reason that process was built was in order to make sure that it was open, transparent, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that to the extent that we can adhere to that, it's to our benefit. And to
Mikey, just to interject quickly, that may be a process that you've come up with, but it's not one that is allowed for in the bylaws or the JNSO has approved. So if that's what we're trying to do, we need to start making sure that this is legitimate as we go along.
Well, you know, I think we've been pretty clear all along on the work steps, dates, and deliverables, and that basically that's what was described months ago when we first got going. So I'm pretty comfortable with the idea of going ahead and building the surrounding parts of the report, and then they'll likely be somewhat repeated in the second wave of report that we produce over a longer period of time. Ken, go ahead.
Mikey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. This is more a question for a council member. First of all, doesn't the agenda call for any new business? Or have you gotten to the point where you work off a pure fixed agenda with no opportunity to raise new business or any new items during the meeting? And the second is more of a statement. It would appear to me that really what you're going to be presenting to the community in Brussels is a status report, an update as to exactly where we are at this point in time. And I would assume that members of the council would like to have that information. You may not be in a position to act on a formal PDP recommendation, but in the past we've always allowed for status reports and updates for the community. And it would just seem to me that that to a great extent, that's the way it will be accepted, by everyone.
Okay, I'm reading the chat. Sorry, I got a little distracted. Tim, go ahead.
I was just going to comment on the report issue, and that the initial report framework doesn't have to have every aspect of it completely filled in. It can just present where we are, where we're at the moment. So it doesn't have to be completely fleshed out. But if we don't use that framework for this report to the council, I think we still want to be thorough in what we report, so that it's clearly understood, because it isn't just the council that's going to see this, it's the community that's going to see it. And they need to understand, I think, or we need to make sure we're clear about what this working group has been doing, where it's at on the various items of its charter, and, what process is still ongoing, and, if others, might find an interest and want to participate in the working group, et cetera. So we don't want to be too abbreviated in the report, and then miss an opportunity perhaps to garner further support from the community with what we're doing.
Okay, I'm going to draw this to a close. I think that we've got the process on track so that we can hit the various hurdles that we need to hit in order to make it into the agenda. I would encourage that those of you on the council, like Christina and Tim and so on, just make sure that we all work together to get this on the agenda the right way. And I don't think we need to use call time to do that, but let's make sure we do. And I've been watching the chat, and there's been some enthusiasm for some actual negotiating on the call. And I'm a big fan of that, if people are willing. We've got about a half an hour left. We have everybody in the room. We have everybody on the call, just about. It's a pretty well-attended call today. And I don't have very strong preferences about how we do it, but I think it would be great if we could hit a few of the hard issues and see if we can break through on one. Does anybody want to pick a hard one and throw it on the table for us to give it a try? Aubrey, you want to...
Jeff had his hand up.
Yeah, I know, but Aubrey is the one that really kicked this off in the chat, so I'd kind of like to defer to her if she's interested.
This is Aubrey. Not necessarily. I mean, I was fine with negotiating, as it were, in the chat or in a doodle poll or offline, and people that have their hands up should probably take precedence over me.
I'm going to have to re-log into Google to Adobe Acrobat because it just totally fell down on my machine. So I'm going to appoint Liz, the official manager of the queue, while I log back in.
Actually, Margie's back, so...
Oh, okay. Margie, you want to run the queue?
I'm sure that's fine. It looks like we've got Jeff Newman has his hand up.
All right, so let me ask the tough question. Are any of the supporters of the, whatever we'll call them, the proposal, the Brian proposal, are any of the supporters of that proposal willing to come off of the cross TLD, except whatever, the limitation? And if so, What are the things that you're looking for to seek protections? I sent in my note last week. As much as it would benefit me and benefit Neustar to have that limitation in place, I'm actually taking the opposite view because I think it's purely anti-competitive. So what are the concerns and what can we do to address those concerns so that it wouldn't apply cross TLD? And for the record, just so I play what's on my what I put on the chat, Neustar at this point is not considering being a registrar, has never really considered being a registrar. So this is not coming out of any kind of – I'm not saying we won't in the future, but I'm just saying this is not coming out of a desire to be a registrar for TLDs for which we're not the registry.
This is Mikey. I got back into Adobe. Brian, did you have your hand up to respond to Jeff?
Sure. Yeah, let me first clarify again. I guess it bears restating. The proposal we have on the table, we don't have an acronym, a cute acronym like JN squared. Let's call it the RAC, which would be the first letter of the last names of the four supporters. The proposal is calling for 15% ownership caps between registry operators and back-end registrars, and likewise back-end providers and registrars, irrespective of the TLD that the registrar distributes. Irrespective. You know, as with the structure in the original VeriSign and NetSol model, there was a 50% ownership cap for a period of time, but NetSol could distribute ComNet in any TLD that it wished. But just as a point of clarification, that's what we're proposing. Our main concern has continued to be and consistently been stated that the access of a registrar to registry data and create harms. And I understand that that is specific to the TLD that the registry operator or back-end service provider support. But this is the primary motivating factor for the proposal, that these tools, opposed to others, provide what we think to be breaks on a system where a registrar could, through other means, get access to registry data and use it to create higher prices, identify high-value names, take names off the market, make them unavailable, et cetera, all the arguments that we've made. So that's what our proposal is, to be clear. And, you know, there are some other proposals on the table that would allow integration in certain forms that would rely on behavioral safeguards or other forms of safeguards. And as we have also stated in the past, we are suspect or we're not convinced that safeguards that have been proposed to be put in place would actually A, do the job effectively, or B, that ICANN would have the wherewithal and ability to enforce against those safeguards. So those are really our primary concerns, and I hope that answers your question, Jeff.
Tim?
Mikey? Go
ahead, Jeff.
Well, I was just going to say it doesn't, really. I'm trying to – I don't mean to be kind of direct, but that doesn't really answer my question. I think the question was, you know, it's kind of hard because you say it's the existing requirement, but the existing requirement would actually allow registrars to be registries but not allow registries to be registrars. You know, obviously I disagree with that whole thing too, I'm just not sure – I'm trying to digest what you said, but in the meantime, I guess let's let others speak.
Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to answer Jeff's question directly. And right now, GoDaddy is not willing or prepared to come off of that position. And I think if you look at the proposal that we tried to resolve the inconsistency that might have existed before, if you want to call them that. For example, registries can own a registrar, but a registrar can own a registry. You know, that was an inconsistency. The fact that the issue with resellers and affiliates and things wasn't covered very well, and we tried to cover that in the proposal. So I think, you know, that the 15% from our perspective, comes from
the fact that that's what's in a number of the current registries, and so we don't see any reason, haven't heard of any reason to come off of that at this point. It seems to have to be working, doesn't cause any serious problems, and so to come off of that at this point, I think there'd need to be a good reason for that. And I think as far as the harms are concerned, I think Brian kind of responded to that pretty clearly. And the only other thing, you know, that I want to mention here is that, because there's a little chat on the Adobe chat about negotiations and, you know, needing to know exactly why people have the positions they do, et cetera. You know, what's frustrating is that I see people, including myself, express their reasons over and over and over again, and yet they just get poo-pooed, and someone will turn around and instead, you know, claim that all that, you know, it's just for the benefit of one person or for, you know, some incumbent is just looking out for their self-interest or whatever it might be. You know, well, that's fine if that's your opinion. But if you don't, you know, if we're going to say, well, you got to express why you're taking a certain position, and someone expresses it, then we're going to have to take that at face value because there isn't really any other way to go at this unless we're going to put people on lie detectors or bring in mind readers. And so if we don't take it at face value, we're never going to get anywhere, and these negotiations are going to be totally pointless.
This is Mikey. I'm going to intervene here, too, and just point out that in many instances, it's helpful when you're framing an argument to cast it in the first person rather than the third person. So when people frame an argument, it's better to say, I feel or my group feels blah, than it does to say, those other guys feel blah. It's just sort of one of those basic kind of brainstorming rules. And I think that we have sometimes fallen off the wagon just a little bit on that. So I would encourage folks not to put words in other people's mouths or impute motives for other people, but rather to keep it sort of in the first person. Brian, I assume your hand is up from before, so I'll circle back to you if you want to speak again. But Jeff Eckhouse next.
Yeah, actually, now I have a question on the list, and I guess it's the same question that Brian is stating. Is Jeff, like, my whole point, my initial question was, so the people that were proposing 15%, how is that? I'm just curious, why would, you know, how is that any better than the 2%, which I thought was what the board had stated, but now on the list, on the little chat, it's going back and forth that the board is at 0, staff is at 2%, and now I'm confused about that, and maybe that could be brought up. But my original question was, for those that are saying, hey, let's go to 15%, why is that? I'm not clear why that's any better than the 2% that, as I said, I thought it was the board, but now somebody's saying staff, so two questions, maybe one question, maybe a clarification.
Let me take a stab at the clarification. I think the board resolution was 0, and that maybe what Jeff is saying in the chat is that the language in the DAG is at 2%.
Right. Yes, this is Jeff. The board hasn't approved that, so the board resolution is still what it is, and the staff has come out with a proposal which I'm assuming what Willie said is based on discussions they've had with the board, but it's not an official board position. It won't be official until it's a resolution.
It's Jeff Eckhouse. I'm not saying, you know, anybody's right or wrong. I would just, if we could ask staff for a clarification on that, it would be great.
Margie, you want to take a swing at that one? I tell you what, let's get that clarified on the list, because that way we can direct it to Kurt. And I'm not sure that it's terribly germane at the moment. I think the main discussion is the difference between something very small, either 2 or 0%, and something larger, 15%, and the question that I think, to rephrase Jeff's question, Jeff Eckhouse's question, is why 15? Why not something else? And to replay what I heard from other cases, but I'll let others speak to that. Ken, you want to go?
Yes. Can you hear me, Mikey?
Yep.
Yeah. This last 5 minutes has been very troubling for me. Mikey, I can't not agree with you at all as to what's germane and what isn't germane. The one thing this working group ought to be able to get is a straight story as to how these numbers are arrived at, where they're coming from, what the logic is behind them, whatever it may be. When Kurt talked to us before, he left the impression, in my understanding, that the DAG, the discussions regarding vertical integration, were a reflection of the retreat that the board take. I don't think we have time to take the temperature every 5 minutes to find out whether it's the staff that we're talking to, the staff we're talking through, whatever it may be, but I think that we need to get clarification. We need to know where this is coming from, what the logic is, because if we're addressing a solution and they're asking us for a solution, it's very important for us to understand exactly what their concerns are and why it is. This is not a game. We're not working with the Ouija board here. We're working with business plans, business futures, and an obligation to do right by the ICANN community and protecting the registrants, protecting the community involves everybody being straightforward and, you know, like Tim said before, you got to take people at the word. What's the answer? And it's not that hard for somebody on this call to pick up the phone, call Kurt or Doug Brandt, or I really frankly don't give a damn who they call, and find out where that number came from. And people are reluctant to discuss this, and we have a real communication problem up the line from to the staff and ultimately to the board. Now, when I say we, I'm not talking about the members of this working group. I'm not talking about the Names Council as well because, you know, the staff is not supposed to be a filter. The staff is supposed to be facilitating this stuff. And I'm not dumping on the staff here at all. I just want clarity, and I think we have every right to expect it. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Kathy.
Okay, thank you.
There we go.
I'm off mute now. I think we've discussed this before, but I wanted to address Jeff Backhouse's excellent question. What's the difference between 0 or 2% and 15%? Because it seems to me there is a big difference. And I'm just going to throw out my speculation about the 2%, and I don't know if I'm reading into anything or whether this is something that we've already talked about on one of our calls. I thought the 2% was supposed to have to address some kind of de minimis issues, like if there's one share that's owned of a stock instead of 0%, if someone owns one share of a stock in a registry or a registrar, that's de minimis. That's essentially no control at all and no voice either. The 15% is designed, it seems to me, to really allow some cross-ownership, to allow some innovation, to allow registries and registrars to work together, but with a small ownership stake, certainly not controlling, not majority. There are ways to gain 15%, I know, and we've talked about them, to be a controlling interest, but the idea is, and it's backed up by some of the other language of what we're trying to put into place, that it's not a controlling interest, it's enough of an interest to allow some innovation, some cross work. The other place where 15% comes in, and if you need, I'm not sure, you know, it's historic, but it's also where the table takes us. And so many of the proposals now come in at 15%. It's really a really very big bump in the middle. There's a few at one end, a few at the other end, a few at, you know, 0 and 2%, a few at 100%. But the vast majority of proposals, the table shows us, are at 15%. So it's not a consensus, but it's certainly a convergence. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. I'm not sure where to take us from here. Oh, Jeff Beckhouse, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add in saying that, you know, I this is one I'd love to hear. I was on the affiliates proposal, and I guess further that Kathy just stated, saying, hey, 15% allows for investment and innovation. And I'm still not sure how that
works over 2%, because what that means to me is saying, hey, a registry or a registrar, the only reason they would need investment is saying, hey, for them to get started, and so, you know, they would need to raise funding. But if it's an existing registry or registrar, I'm not sure how allowing 15% investment versus 2% investment allows for innovation or investment. And I'd love to hear an answer to that from the different groups. And so that was my question on that.
Okay. I'm not seeing a bunch of hands come up. I think that I'm reading the chat. Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I didn't quite get the full gist of Jeff Eckes' question. But again, you know, the 15% for GoDaddy is because that's the prevailing percentage within the major GTLD contracts. There may be some exceptions within the sponsored contracts, perhaps. I you know, .pro was brought up. The fact is .pro does now contain the 15% limitation with .pro itself as an exception, but that limitation was included in the contract outside of that. So, and that was the current one. I'm not sure if that's completely been approved and implemented yet, but that's the proposed amendment. I think that'll be going into .pro's contract. So, you know, you can say, well, yeah, is it arbitrary? Well, maybe, you know, but we didn't come up with it. I mean, that's the percentage that's been being used for some time now, and so it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to us to come up with other percentages that have no history, that are just as arbitrary, that don't make any more sense, or we have no more reason for than the 15% that's been in use now for some time, so that we, you know, keep a level playing field as we go into this new GTLD era with the new GTLDs and the incumbents. That's our main concern about it. I don't know what else it can really explain. And if we're going to go to some other percentage, the issue we have with that, or with some of the exceptions and the other things that are being discussed, is that, you know, are those things possible? Well, sure. But do we really have the time before the first round of new GTLDs to really fully vet and discuss and look at all the harms and the issues and everything involved with all these other concepts? We don't believe we do if we want to see new GTLDs come out with any time within the next several months, because these things will take much longer to debate, and I think just the discussion that we're having today is an indication of that, let alone all the discussions and debates that have gone on in this working group, and looking at where we're at today. Wow.
That was amazing. That was liftoff.
Maybe it was an attempt to drown me out. So that's you know, I guess I can keep repeating that, but that's really all I can say unless I miss some aspect of Jeff's question. But I'm trying to answer it as best I can.
Can I respond? Can I just hopefully clarify that?
Sure, go ahead, Jim.
What I was saying is, Tim, was Kathy had just stated, which is what was in the proposal, that says 15% allows for investment and innovation. And what I was saying was, you know, further investment which leads to innovation. I guess my question was, I'm not sure how raising that percentage allows it. Has there ever been a documented case, or do we need it to say, oh, that, you know, there was a registry that needed investment from a company, or a registrar that needed investment from a company. That's the only thing I was saying was that I don't see how that specifically leads to innovation. I think, you know, what leads to innovation is a whole other question, but I wasn't thinking that a percentage of ownership was that, and how it could lead to it in 15% and not 2%. That was my question, so.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess, you know, the way we're looking at it is, how can we get new GTLDs out as quickly as possible? And, you know, not, you know, we have no qualms at all about continuing discussion on how we might
open things up further to vertical integration, but just, you know, what's the quickest way to get new GTODs out and get that ball rolling? And then I think once we see replies and what's out there, you know, it's going to open a lot of eyes, perhaps, and maybe create, you know, a situation where there'll be a lot less concerns about what might transpire down the road. But anyway, thanks.
Jeff Newman, are you in the queue for? I can't tell who's old and who's new. If you're new, go ahead.
Yeah, I had go ahead, Jeff Newman's before me.
Yeah, so this is just. I mean, I started this discussion out kind of thinking this is the way it was going to turn out, but I guess the question I had actually wasn't related to the 15%, although that's what we got stuck on. And the question I asked at the beginning, at the outset, was anyone willing to move off of the requirement that it apply cross TLDs? And the answer I got from Brian and from Tim seemed to be that no, they were not willing to go off of it. I'd like to hear from others, because I think at this point there have been a number of registrars and other entities that operate either as resellers or otherwise that have already announced that they're interested in getting into the registry game, if you will. And I just think getting behind a proposal that per se eliminates them completely from becoming registries or registry service providers, which, by the way, is not in the current agreement. So 15% has nothing to do with the registry service provider or registry infrastructure provider. That's not anywhere. But again, as Neustar's original proposal was, I'm fine with that as long as it's within the TLD. I'm not sure. It just seems overly restrictive, and at this stage of the game, it just doesn't seem right to propose something that will keep a number of registrars that have already announced, whether it's GMO for .shop, whether it's Network Solutions being part of Central Registry, whether it's, you know, any other registrars that have come out, just simply have a blanket rule. This to me seems like it's not going to gain sense. And I'm not calling.
Welcome to Verizon Wireless. The one call is not available at this time.
Operator, could you take a look?
Yes, I'm trying to locate that line.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
So bottom line is a solution that doesn't allow for some of these entities to get into the registry market and also allow registries to get into the registrar market for unrelated TLDs, I don't think it's going to gain consensus of the community. But I do think a strong possibility exists if the the RAC proposal could be modified to do cross TLDs. I think we may have a shot at getting consensus among the community. So I would strongly ask that that there be some willingness to move off of that, because I truly believe that we could achieve consensus if we do that, but we won't be able to if we don't.
Okay, this is Mikey. We are now right at the end of the call time. I can't tell who's still in the queue.
Hey, Mikey, it's Jeff Eckhouse. Can I have one quick statement in there?
Sure,
and
go ahead.
This has to do with to what Tim said, and I think Alan had said on the list and some others saying, hey, why don't we see what it's like in the first round and then adjust in the second round? So my answer to that is there's only going to be one chance to get a .shop or a .web or some others. So for those people that have these ideas and they want to work on these, saying, hey, why don't you just wait till round two and see what happens, I think that's unfair, because you'd be excluding those people from participating in the first round, which is going to be the big critical round where, you know, the staff expects, I think it was 382 was their estimate, so to say wait till second round is not fair, and I don't think something that anybody would be able to accept.
Okay, let's see. Alan?
Yeah, just a quick point addressing what Jeff said. I'm one of those who feel that the affiliates proposal under whatever name could be modified to allow some level of cross-ownership if you don't market in your own TLD. I believe, however, it will require a lot more work to put the right constraints on it, the right contractual terms on it, than we have time for in this round. And I don't know how to, I don't have a time machine, so I can't fix that. I believe, among other things, it will require contractual changes on the registrar side as well as on the registry side, which is far more problematic because of the terms of the RAA. So I would like to see it conceptually. I have far too many worries right now about potential harms and certainly about ICANN's inability to monitor and take action if there are any infractions.
Okay. Tim, is your hand up from before, or did you have a comment in this last summary?
Just a comment. And it may not be a popular one, but, you know, I appreciate what Jeff has said about that, the fairness of, you know, the first round going out with some applicants who might later qualify. You know, one way to look at this is that, you know, none of this was ever envisioned or addressed in the initial policy by the GNSO. So a lot of applicants have kind of come into this making certain assumptions about what they may or may not be able to do. And I think, you know, ICANN, the community, and any of us can really be held responsible or should feel responsible for the situation those applicants might find themselves in. And, you know, that said, I can appreciate that situation. I mean, GoDaddy is one of those people. I mean, we, you know, had a significant amount of investment under one possible concept we realized wasn't too likely or probably not wise. However, one thing we would be in favor of, and that is that if the community is in favor of delaying new GTLDs, we don't have this initial rollout until we have all these issues worked out and worked through. And I don't mean to say this tongue-in-cheek. We would seriously be in favor of the rollout being held up until this can be completely worked through and we can have the right answers. We get the impression that's not the way most of the community feels, but I just want to put that out there, that we would be one in favor or in support of that, and that would solve Jeff's concern, I believe.
Okay. I think that this is a good spot to end, people. Keep working. Let's see, I'm reading the chat as it scrolls by. It's like watching a teleprompter. I would highlight the distinction between the two parts of what we're doing. You know, we're doing a sort of a scramble to insert language essentially in the DAG for round one, and then we do contemplate a much longer and more thoughtful approach to really dig into these issues and explore them. And, you know, we could certainly propose what Tim is describing and say, look, we could revert to a more traditional approach. Would take considerably longer, but it would delay the DAG. And it's my impression as well that the community would not be very excited about that. So I think we have to continue on with the scramble, but I certainly wouldn't be opposed to that other approach. Continuing the scramble, next Thursday is sort of our day. So folks saw the beginnings of conversations on this call. I encourage you all to keep talking to each other directly, and I'll look forward to reporting any changes and doing anything I can to help, and we'll see you a couple hours later on Thursday. Thanks, folks.
Thanks, Mikey.
Thanks, Mikey.